Why is he gone then?
No. I'm comparing it. If I steal something and I sell it, right, the people who buy it from me, you know, also somewhat blameworthy if they know that it was stolen goods. Because if he doesn't have a place to sell his good, his what he steals, he'll stop stealing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The person buying the stolen goods is listening to the Lashon Hara. I'm just using it as a metaphor.
Hi, Shina.
Okay, are we taping?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. So today is Dibra number 9. We had Dibra number 10 last time. Now we're up to Dibra number 9, which is Lo Ta'aneh Re'acha Eid Shaker. So let's analyze the pasuk. I have it here for you. Okay, it's a very short pasuk. Let me get in here. Okay, the text that we are using is the text of the Torah Tamima. Torah Tamima was a European Rav who moved here to New York in the 20s. He lived here until the early 30s. And he was the son of the Aruch HaShulchan. His name was Baruch HaLevi Epstein. And he came up with the idea that really is still considered very valuable, but it was something the Malbim had done before him in a slightly different way. The Malbim and the Torah Tamima are, strictly speaking, not commentaries to the Torah. They're commentaries to, in the case of the Malbim, the Medrashei Halacha to the Torah, and in the case of the Torah Tamima, to the Gemaras. So here you have the Torah at the top, you have Onkelos, you have Rashi, and you see it says Torah Tamima underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So that is just simply will be Gemaras that cite these sources, these psukim. At the bottom, you have his notes to these Gemaras. Okay, everyone see what you're doing? Okay, there's some Masechtas that if you study the Torah Tamima, let's say you're studying Masechtas Nazir. So just go through the whole parak of Nazir with all the Torah Tamimas. You have an amazing introduction to the Gemara. It's like you've done half the Gemara already. If there's a part of the Torah that has like Maseches Sota. There's a parak about Sota, you know, Maseches Nazir, something. Maseches Arachim, through the chapter 26 of Sefer Vayikra with all the Torah Tamimas, and you have a good review of Maseches Arachim, etc., etc. Okay, so our pasuk is very simple. It's only 5 words, right? Lo Sa'aneh V'Re'acha Eid Shaker. Lo Sa'aneh V'Re'acha Eid Shaker. Right? The 5 words are very easy to define. Eid Shaker should be Sheker, but because it's at the end of the pasuk, the E becomes an O. So Eid Sheker means false witness. Sahadusa de Shikra. Right? The word Sheker defines the Eid. This is an important point in Halacha, just share with you for a moment, is why when it says, you see the first Torah Tamima on this, Lo Sa'aneh, I put a check mark there, you see it?
Yeah.
It says, Hare Zu Azhara La'edim Zomimim. There's two reasons why the Gemara does this in the Maseches Makos. One, first let's define Edim Zomim. Edim Zomim are not just false witnesses, they are witnesses whose testimony has been undone, but the witnesses have been undone. I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment. But it's also crucial to understand why it says Azhara le'edim zomimim, is because there is a concept in the Talmud called Ein Onshin Ela Im Kein Mazhirin. It cannot be a punishment unless the Torah mentions this rule at least twice.
Twice?
Twice. There's no punishment in the Torah if the mitzvah is only mentioned once. Now, there are some mitzvahs in Sefer Devarim, like the very, very famous one is Ben Sora Mora. Where do we have Ben Sora Mora anywhere else in the Torah besides that? How can you punish this kid? It's the only place in the Torah where it says not to do this. So the Gemara in the Masechta Sanhedrin says, Azhara leben soro mora minayin, shneemar, lo tochlu al hadam. Lo tochlu al hadam, which means, according to the drasha of the Gemara, don't eat in a way which will one day make you shed blood. It's not the pshat of the pasuk by any means. But don't eat in a way, so what is it, that the boy eats raw food, and he eats very strong wine, and he's getting drunk, and he's eating like a brigand, and he's only 12 years old, for goodness sakes. But he's eating in such a way that's going to make him to join the wrong people, and he's going to end up killing someone. Not just himself, but someone else. So, nidon al shem sofo. Anyway, I'm just giving you an example of a case where you have a warning. This is also true of Edim Zalmimim. The parsha of Edim Zalmimim, say for parsha Shoftim, that says, if witnesses are found to be false, you do to the witnesses... Yeah, what do you think?
What they wanted to do
to the person, right? Mm-hmm. So, where do we see an Azhara to that? That's the only place in the Torah where it's mentioned. That's why the Gemara says this. Here is the Azhara. Lo saner echai, shaker. And now it doesn't say in the Aseret Hadibros what's going to happen to you if you ta'aner echai, shaker, right? Right? But here is the warning. Don't say when you, I didn't know that they would do this to me if I you were warned. You were warned already. Don't bring false testimony.
The witness on the new moon was that because some of the Adam weren't.
So we'll talk about cases where we can't do Torah Sazama, but maybe it's shaykh to get off on that tangent now. But first, the crucial point of Edim Zalmimim is that because it says Lo ta'aneh v'reyacha eid shaker means the aid, the witness is, we undermine the witness, not the testimony. We undermine the witness with Edim Zalmimim. You'll understand, this will go a long way with understanding the lumdus of Maseches Makos. If two witnesses say he did this and two witnesses say he didn't do this, why should we believe these two over that? Those two. Right? When two witnesses say, we saw this person commit murder on Tuesday afternoon, and they test them, they show where was the sun in the sky at the time, they say, okay, 3:30 in the afternoon, this person committed murder. Right? Now, if two other witnesses say, we saw that person alive... 2 hours later, we saw the person that they say was killed, we saw him the next day. Then that doesn't make them Edim Zalmimim. Why should we believe these two more than those two? Edim Zalmimim, it is based on this pasuk, undermines not the testimony. Finish what I'm saying? It undermines the witnesses. Because otherwise, we can always say in court, why are you believing me more than them? Why are you believing them more than me? I say he's dead, they say he's alive. Alright, let's look into it further. Have you ever heard a case where this guy is, this lawyer is trying to convince a jury that his client up for a murder rap is actually innocent? And he says, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I will prove to you beyond the shadow of a doubt that my client did not commit this murder, because in 5 minutes... the person he allegedly murdered is about to walk into this room.
Everybody looks at the door.
Right?
Except the client.
Right. So when the judge pronounces him guilty, all the jurors pronounce him guilty nonetheless, so they said, but the lawyer asked, but didn't I sow any seeds of doubt in your mind? And they said, yes, absolutely. Everybody in this court was so intrigued by the possibility that this man, except your client, he's the only one who didn't look incredulous at this possibility. All right, we're not approaching testimony from the standpoint of, let's say, what happened here, because if it's what happened, why should we believe these new two people more than the original two people, right? Point is that what Edim Zomimim, and that's, now you see the Lashon. What does Zomimim mean?
It's a plot.
Yes, sometimes it's used in a good way, usually in a bad way. Kol asher yozmu la'asos, right? In Mishlei, it's used, sometimes used in a bit, but in Mishlei, it's sometimes used in a good way, such as, we say it every Friday night before Kiddush. Zomamo sodeh vatikochehu mipri chapea natakorem. Chok. Zomamo sodeh vatikochehu.
The Hebrew word yozma initiative. Is the same
show. Yeah. I just used that pasuk. Yeah. So she, the Eish Yisrael zomem mosodeh. She surveys the land. You can't just look at. Oh yeah, that's 22,000. You have to zomem means you have to plot out what this is worth. Okay. So edim zomemim are plotting witnesses. Now that's why when you test witnesses. They're tested separately. You know, in the Rashi film, it begins with Rashi holding a Beis Din, and he's testing the witnesses together. It's a mistake. Oh. You know, in that it's an animated film about Rashi. It's a mistake right in the beginning that he's testing the witnesses of a particular case involving someone who stole, and he's asking both of them, where was he when he allegedly stole it? What was he doing? How much was it? And he's not allowed to. You have to check them each separately to make sure that their story. Yeah. You know, okay. So, right. So that's how do you make someone zomimim? Is by undermining the witnesses. You could not have seen him commit this murder at 3 p.m. on Monday. Because on Monday, you were with us in the Caribbean the whole day. Right? And you telling me that he killed him in Georgia. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right? So that's what it is. You see, the original two witnesses become the object of a new testimony. You know what I'm saying? If two witnesses say, I saw Shimon commit murder, and Shimon says, I did not commit that murder. We're not going to take Shimon's testimony above two witnesses, right? He's the object of testimony. Of course he's going to disagree. Two witnesses say, Shimon lent Reuven $1,000. Reuven's going to say, no, I never borrowed that money. What are you talking about? We saw you borrow the money. So he goes, well, why do you accept their words more than mine? Because you're the object of testimony. Right? So when you want to undermine testimony, you don't undermine the testimony itself. You undermine the witnesses who gave it. Otherwise, why should I believe these new two witnesses more than the original two witnesses? Right?
Yeah.
That's how it works in the Jewish courts. Now, yes?
But it could also be the case that the two witnesses are lying, but then you have to, I guess, prove it. Like, it could be one person tells it.
Yes. So there's all kinds of guidelines for this, of course, but you know, the courts are very adept at questioning the witnesses to make sure that this is not a conspiracy or something of that sort. Now, the first Mishnah in Maseches Makos discusses cases of hazama, of testimony. In fact, the courts don't allow testimony to ever be given unless it is possible to give that testimony can be given to hazama. What do I mean? If the two witnesses claim that they saw a particular thing happen, but they can't tell when it happened, we throw it out. You don't accept testimony if you can't tell when it happened. Because if you can't tell when it happened, you can't be undone. No one can come in and say, no, sorry, you can't give uncontested testimony. Testimony that's impossible to contest. Because if it's impossible to contest, how much easier it is then for those two people to lie. Always have to be on your guard. Make sure that you go in there to testify that you are right on, spot on what you saw and what you're saying. Right? You understand why if they can't give you the time and the day of when they think this thing happened. The Gemara talks about leeway. There are a few hours of leeway, and you know, fine. But if you can't remember whether it was Monday or Tuesday, you're not going to accept it. Right? Now, there are some exceptions to this, depending on the type of testimony that I'm talking about, where based on your testimony, someone is going to be punished. That's what we're talking about. Okay? All right, so now you mentioned Rosh Chodesh. There's a very, very, very famous question about Rosh Chodesh, where two men come into the court and they say, "We saw the moon." And originally, the moon, the Rosh Chodesh, was not fixed. You had to determine the Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh can only ever fall on two possible days. Ready? The 30th day from the previous Rosh Chodesh, or the 30th and 31st day. Well, that's the way it is now, but the 30th or the 31st day, depending on the moon's sighting. The reason for this fluctuation is, anybody knows, it's the revolution of the moon accounting for the gravity of the Earth. It takes 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and 32 halakim, or something. Right? Okay? So that amounts to, if it was perfectly 29 days and 12 hours, then we can always do 29-30, 29-30, 29-30. But those are extra 44 minutes and 30 seconds if you keep, you just do the math. It will take, little less than a year and a half, right? About a year and a half to require another day in that mix. You follow me? Just a year and a half. You understand why? 44 times 18 gets you into close to the amount of minutes in a day, and it's in a whole another day, right? There are 2 months in the Jewish calendar where you can mishraim like that, right? You know, Cheshvan, Cheshvan and Kislev. No. Cheshvan and Kislev can have 29 or 30 days. All the other months of the year are fixed. Right? So, originally, before the fixing of the months, the calendar was set by sighting. Right? Sometimes the sighting led to a situation which was not desirable, such as Yom Kippur falling on a Sunday. We don't like Yom Kippur falling on a Sunday because the day before is Shabbos, right?
Yeah.
In this particular case, it was Yom Kippur falling on a Friday. You don't like Yom Kippur falling on a Friday either. Because if Yom Kippur falls on a Friday, how are you going to prepare for Shabbos? Mm-hmm. Yom Tov falls on a Friday, you make an Erev Tov Shilin, you can cook, all right. But Yom Kippur falls on a Friday, and the Gemara was also worried about people who die right before Yom Kippur. They won't be able to be buried Friday and Shabbos. It's maybe still hot in Israel. It'll go 2 days where they didn't have ways to preserve a body so long. So the Gemara was concerned that Yom Kippur should never fall on a Friday or a Sunday. Now, when you're checking the moon by sight, that could be a problem. Right? When you set the calendar, so you can set it up and avoid. In fact, our calendar is set so that Yom Kippur never falls on Friday or Shabbos or Sunday, and Hoshana Rabbah never falls on Shabbos. That's the whole thing. Our whole calendar just wants to avoid those three things, and everything else flows from that. All right? Any other day, all the bets are off. So one time the calendar was supposed to fall where Yom Kippur falls on a Friday, and Rabbi Gamliel so delayed them from giving their testimony that he said, we can't declare it Rosh Chodesh. It's too late. We missed it. And people started seeing a sliver of the moon already. Remember someone disagreed with him, and he said, he used a metaphor. He said, the woman's belly is between her teeth, and you're telling me she gave birth already? Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, don't say she gave birth. She's still pregnant, right? The moon is out there in the sky, and you're telling me it's not Rosh Chodesh yet? Right? The metaphors are funny. So Reb Gamliel said, tough. I said it's not Rosh Chodesh yet. Because they wanted Yom Kippur to fall on Shabbos, not on Friday. So remember what Reb Gamliel made Rabbi Yeshua do? He made him come over with his, to eat with him. And Rabbi Yeshua says, the whole of Israel knows that Yom Kippur is supposed to be on Friday. What are you doing? And he goes, Rosh Chodesh doesn't fall until the Sanhedrin says it falls. We determine Rosh Chodesh, not God. God determines Shabbos. We determine Rosh Chodesh. So it's not Rosh Chodesh unless we say so. Right? There's one manipulation we do. It happens pretty often. When Hanukkah ever falls on a Shabbos, the first day and last day Shabbos.
It happens often.
Yeah. Asar B'Teves is slated to fall in such a year on Shabbos. Right? When that happens, we add a day to Kislev, whether we needed it cosmologically or not.
Because you can't.
Because Asarbateves, according to our traditions, would be Doche Shabbos. You would fast on Shabbos like in Kippur.
Really? Because
it's the only one that can come out on Friday.
Right.
It's the only one we fast on Friday.
Friday too, we fast. Like Thomas Esther, we pushed back to Thursday this year, remember? So Asarbateves has a certain chumrah. I can give you a few reasons for it, but that's too much.
That's
Mayim Hazeh, like Yom Kippur. Plus, you know what? It's the only one of all the fasts.
It's the only one mentioned specifically.
That gives you the actual date. There's no Tisha B'Av is not in the Tanakh. Shiva Sabatamos is not in Tanakh. Tzom Gedalia is not in Tanakh. Yeah, those days are in the Bible, the months we fast are in, but not the dates we fast. Just as Gedalia was killed in the beginning of the seventh month, it says the Beis Mikdash was destroyed in the seventh of Av, and another place the tenth of Av, and the destruction of the walls was on the ninth of Tammuz, the breakthrough. Right? Okay. Okay. All right. So here was the famous question about Rosh Chodesh. Two men come and they say, we saw the moon. We saw the moon and we saw a sliver of the moon. It's Rosh Chodesh. So then two boys becoming bar mitzvah on Rosh Chodesh. You see where this is going? Two boys who becoming bar mitzvah on that day, Rosh Chodesh, they come in and they say, you couldn't have seen the moon last night. You were with us in a cave the last week, including last night. So now, in the case of punishments, we punish the witnesses. But in such a case, what are you going to do to them? Make them to be not Rosh Chodesh? So you just throw the testimony out, right? We'll see other cases like this. So it could be that they get malchus. Okay. So
there must be other two witnesses.
No other witnesses come in. And these, you see what's happening now? These two boys say, you couldn't have seen the moon, you were with us. So what happens as a result? It's not Rosh Chodesh. But then if it's not Rosh Chodesh, what happens?
A polar program?
Then they're not bar mitzvah. Because the bar mitzvah is Rosh Chodesh. And if they're not bar mitzvah, their testimony gets thrown out. So if their testimony gets thrown out, the original two said, see, I told you we were telling the truth. These guys are obviously, you know, they're not able to testify. They're not bar mitzvah yet. Are you following? So then they come back into court and they say, we saw the moon. Right?
It can be never ending.
It could be never ending until the day is over. They wait for someone to keep doing it until someone else comes in. You see, you understand what I'm saying here? This is known in the halacha as palginon dibura. We take half. Right. So this is known as palginon dibura, where we would just say it's Rosh Chodesh and end it. That's all. Otherwise, it's never ending. We allow it to be Rosh Chodesh. Okay? All right, but there are some cases where we just can't do Torah Sazama. For instance, two witnesses come and say, this guy, who always put himself out as a Kohen, right? We were the two witnesses at the Beis Din when his mother got divorced from her first husband. You following? And then she married this Kohen. She obviously didn't tell him, well, maybe she did, but she didn't tell him she was a divorcee. And then she married this Kohen, and this kid thinks he's a Kohen. He's not.
Okay.
We were there at the divorce, right? Okay. Then two other witnesses come and say that you couldn't have seen them because for that entire year, you were with us in Australia at the time you say you were at the get. So even if these two witnesses are Kohanim, what are you going to do? You can't. You know what I'm saying? There are some Edim Zomim that involve punishments, right? Where you can't give the same, you know what I'm saying? Also, if two witnesses say, we saw him commit murder, right? And they would get killed for that.
The Edim Zomim
would get killed because they wanted to commit murder with their testimony, right? If you say, we saw him kill someone and he didn't, they didn't see that. They're committing murder with their testimony. So you would do, right? So, but if they said we saw him kill inadvertently, what's the punishment for inadvertent killing? You go to Ir Miklat. You go to the city of refuge. So the Gemara says that's, the Mishnah says that's an exception. You don't go to a city of refuge as an eid zomim for testifying that someone killed inadvertently.
So you just get off?
No, they get malchus. They violated the law of San Erech.
Don't you need ashara before?
No, good question. Eidim zomim is one of the very few cases in the whole Tanakh that does not need an ashara. No one has to warn you and say,
if you go,
of course, in the court, when anyone gives testimony, they're going to say to them, are you sure that this is the truth? They're going to take an oath on the Perek Tefillin or a Sefer Torah. They're going to say, are you sure you're telling the truth? Because based on your testimony, we're going to take $2,000 from that man and we're going to make him pay someone. So are you sure you saw this? And yes, they may even tell them something like, if you're not telling the truth, we'll take this money from you.
Mm-hmm. Right? But the Gemara says,
yeah, so I just made this, use this to explain. Yeah, I use this to explain how can we ever punish Eidim Zomimim
if there's no Asara.
He said, this is the Asara. Every Jew knows, Lo Sanever Echoit Shokir. Okay? You know what? We're just using this. What? Oh, okay. All right, so we're just in Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. Okay. So if you look at Tzadik Bet, in the Torah Tzmimi, he deals with the question we're asking now. Perush Rashi la'onshon bedin hazama. Okay, that's how Rashi explains it. That this has to do with the din of Eidim Zomim. Ad kan l'shono. V'nira kavonas tevaro. This is what Rashi means when he says to punish them in the din of Hazama if they lie in court. What you said should happen to this person is going to happen to you. What is Rashi's kavona? Shelo pireish kimo turn ba'alma she'azhara hu le'inyan hasra'a. He's saying is that this pasuk is not telling us an issue about a warning, meaning a warning when you're doing an aveira, right? If I'm writing on Shabbos, right? So someone has to warn me about two things. One, really three things. One, do you realize that you're writing? Shabbos. Two, do you realize that it's Shabbos? And three, do you realize that writing is forbidden on Shabbos? Okay? So you don't need warnings like that for someone who is Eidim Zomim. Right? Look, I think there's some certain things called like Miranda laws where when you're arresting someone you have to say certain statements. Mm-hmm. And if those statements were not made, the person, will not... It gets off on technicalities and things like that, right? So too, in a court, there are certain things that are mentioned to the perpetrator, all right? But he's saying here that he says Rashi does not bring in the idea of a warning from an individual to him. So if you see Ya'an Dekaimalon Eidim Zomim Ein Srichim Hasra Kimavur B'Ksuv Islamet Gimel Laman Aleph. And because we paskin that Eidim Zomim do not need a warning. Okay? Right? Okay, so we defined Eid Shaker. Everyone clear what we did with these two words? It's not Lo Sanevriacha Eidus Sheker. It's Lo Sanevriacha Eid Shaker. The Torah of Eidim Zomim doesn't go after the testimony, it goes after the witness. If it's the testimony, they let the two witnesses say, why do you believe their testimony more than mine? Okay? It's a diuk on the word aid. Right? It doesn't mean false testimony. It means don't be a false witness. Right? For instance, think of this pasuk. It says in the Torah, don't take a bribe, because bribery, this is what it does. Ye'aver enei pikhim V'saleif divrei tzadikim. Right? So Rashi insists that this means bribery will blind smart people, or I mean clear people, pikhi means someone who can see, but see clearly, and it will pervert divrei tzadikim. What does divrei tzadikim mean?
The words of the
righteous person.
Yeah, but it can't mean that, Rashi says.
Words that the destinies?
Words that are righteous. Why? Mm. Why does he say that? Why? Because
you're not saying it properly.
Because a tzaddik can't be perverted.
A tzaddik wouldn't take a bribe. If he took a bribe, why is the Torah calling him a tzaddik? You get it? Okay.
Yes. But if you receive an award, say like a burnt or a offering or a priestly blessing or something like that, if I'm going to award that to you, not as a gift or a bribe, simply for good service.
So that's then
different.
I understand. The Gemara does say when it comes to giving gifts to the Kohanim, every non-Kohen has the right to choose the Kohen. But it shouldn't be like a quid pro quo.
Exactly.
Right.
So that would be good service.
Right, yeah, good.
Thank you.
Okay, that's a good question. All right, so that's what we're saying here. It's eight sheker is on the person. There, divrei tzadikim is bedafka, not on the person. That's why Rashi says, divorim mitzudakim, righteous words. The word tzadikim goes on the words. Even if the words seem upright, as soon as you take a bribe, it's going downhill.
Yeah.
Right, so that's what eight sheker means. Now let's analyze the other three words. Okay, so I would prefer first to discuss the word ta'aneh, but this Torah Tzmima discusses the word re'acha. Right, lo ta'aneh bereacha eight sheker. Right, do not testify. In, or not so much for, but about your reacha, with false testimony. So who's this reacha? Who's this? Yeah. So who is this? So this it's not so much this parsha where this is germane, but parsha's kedoshim has five or six different words like this. Right? Betzedek tishpot amitecha. Right. If lo tisna achicha bilvavecha, hocheach tocheach es amisecha, v'haftel recha kamolcha.
So it's a kal b'chomer.
It's amazing. I have achicha, amitecha, reacha. I have nasiba amchalo. I mean, is it really some very, very wide-ranging descriptions of the people to whom these mitzvahs apply. And Abravanel says the pshat is that unless it says ochicha, it means to include Gentiles as well. All right. Listen to some of these right, it says, B'tzedek tishpot amitecha, lo telech rechil ba'amecha, lo ta'amal bedam reyecha, lo tisna achicha, hochich tuchichet amitecha, lo tikom ve lo titor et b'nei amecha, right? Haftu l'reyecha kamocha. Right? So let's look at the ones that are on b'nei amecha. Don't take vengeance against b'nei amecha. What are you talking about? We, that's exactly what we do to Amalek. You're telling me what we're doing to Amalek is not vengeance?
It's the exception to the rule.
I'm sorry, it's not B'nai Amecha. Right. What does it say? We didn't take Nikom Nikmas B'nai Yisrael Meis Hamidyonim. Right? Come on, is these all over Tanakh we have these kind of things. It's just B'nai Amecha, so we have to make a diuk. You see? Right? Hochech tochech es amisecha. Amisecha means like your peer. Right? Because if you're not my peer, maybe I shouldn't be rebuking you. Because maybe you're not. Maybe I don't understand you. Maybe I'm not in your shoes. Right? I'm just going down to the core of the meaning of these different words. So what does it mean? Lo sa'aneh b'reacha eit shaker. So the Brahmanel says v'haftu l'reacha kamocha, juxtaposed to a pasuk that says lo tisna es achicha, right? Lo tikom v'lo sitor es b'nei amecha. V'haftu l'reacha. What's the Torah doing? Why do this? Why use for every three words another description of who the person who's the object of this command? So Brahmanel says Reacha means another human being. I mean, being a false witness is usur no matter what your purpose is, no matter who the object is. Yeah, but it's a bad person.
Doesn't matter. It's not bad.
Remember, was it in this class that I said the last time that, I don't know if it was maybe in the Monday night class, where there's this, I didn't forget what it was, I think someone just told me that this guy plays an accountant, but in real life he's a spy, and he takes out people for the CIA, and his wife is so bored with his life, and then she finds out that he's a CIA agent.
And things change,
and then she finds out that he was really a violent CIA agent, and goes, "You killed people?" And he goes, they were only bad people. Only the bad ones. Right? So Torah says, V'hafta l'reacha kamocha. It's not saying you choose the people you choose to love. You know, all right, look, some people are wicked and evil, and you know, you can always even say, oh, you want hate the sin, not the sinner. Come on, you know, there's sometimes where the person just doesn't deserve to have to be judged favorably and things like that. But here, when it comes to bearing a false witness, it is so corrosive of the witness that it doesn't matter what your purpose is. Right? Okay. This is true in a court of law, but it could be true even in other areas. Even when the halacha says you're allowed to lie in the interests of peace. Right? Mm-hmm. You're familiar with such a rule?
Yes.
Utul Shalom Mipnei Shalom.
The between husband and wife.
Yeah, the Hashem himself changed. Right?
With
Asar and Avraham.
Yeah.
Right, so there's a story in the Gemara in Yevamos. Just one page after that Gemara is. And the Gemara tells a story about Rav, who was married to a very contrary woman. If he said it's sunny, she'd somehow find out that it's raining outside. If he said it's raining, she'd say, she was very contrary. They were in love, but she was contrary. Right, so if he would ask for meatballs, he'd get chicken. If he asked for chicken, if he asked for lentils, he'd get rice. If he asked for rice, he'll get lentils. So one time he tells his son, you know, I'm really in the mood for rice. Can you please ask mom to put up some rice for dinner? And he gets his rice because the boy asked for lentils. So when he says to him, oh my God, what I wanted. So the boy said, yeah, but Dad, it's because I asked for lentils. He goes, my son, you're very clever, but you lie. You lie to your mother. And it says in the Tanakh, "Limdu l'shonam daber sheker," and there's always bad things that happens when you tell lies. So the Marshal and the Marshal ask questions. They say, "Why couldn't Rav's son answer like God did? You know, I'm meant to enhance peace between you and Mom, so I told a little white lie, isn't that? Mutl l'shonam is mipnei
hashalom." Stored like relationship
shalom bayis. Right. So in shalom bayis, why shouldn't it be allowed? So the answer is, even when lying in the interests of peace, one is not allowed to do so if the lie must become habitual.
Mm.
He's going to always have to lie from then on. And the next time he doesn't lie, he's going to say, hey, why didn't I get what I wanted? I thought she's changing. And he goes, oh, this time I didn't ask for the opposite. He goes, then he's going to get more upset.
Mm.
Right? He's going to find out that the whole thing was a lie. Right? Anyway, the point is that and that story about Aaron going to both sides, maybe that Medrash disagrees with this whole Mahalach. Or just Aaron was hoping that the two would never find out that the other one still, you know. No, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
All right, but Lamaisa, here's the point is that if lying becomes like, and you know people can be like this. That sometimes they just gratuitously lie. You know what I'm saying? They don't need to lie. And then some of them even run for president.
Yeah.
become president. So that's why the pasuk in Yirmiyahu was used. Limdu l'shonam daber sheker, and not a Torah pasuk like Midvar Sheker Tirchak or or lo tishakra, because limdu lishonim davasheka means you're learning how to lie. So if you go, you go into court and you tell a lie, the Gemara says on Daf Lamed Hey in Masechta Shavuos, Daf Lamed, I'm sorry, Masechta Shavuos, this whole series of things where you might have thought, oh, I can do this, I can lie like this, right? No, you can't even give what appears to be a lie. It's in the next page in the Gemara tells that a rabbi told one of his students, listen, I know as much as I'm standing here today that this man owes me $1,000. He admitted to me privately just yesterday, but I have no proof. I trusted him. I didn't have no witnesses. I don't have anything written, right? But he knows that there was one other person in the room at the time. But I need two witnesses to prove that he owes me the money. So here's what I'm asking you to do, my student. Tomorrow I have a court case. I would like you to just walk in with that other witness. And when he sees you walk in with him, he'll think that I have two witnesses that know he owes me the money, that he owes me the money, and maybe he'll relent and confess. And the Gemara says even that's prohibited. Because you're giving the false impression that he knows testimony about the case. He doesn't. You're not coming in to test. He goes, I wouldn't ask you to test, actual testify. I just want you to walk in with him. Even that's forbidden. Right. Yes?
I work with CERC New York, branch of the New York State Department of Health and Emergencies and Disasters. Would it be considered a lie in the context of presenting a public panic if one were to tell perhaps a disaster enough to get people to go away, but not the real magnitude of what would be about to happen, which would be a major disaster?
That happened with the last snowstorm.
Yes.
Yeah, so... Yeah, so okay. You know, everything has to be. Sometimes you know you have to give the benefit of the doubt that they want to cover. You know, they want to err on the side of caution sometimes. But all right, okay. So that's now on the word vereacha. You've concluded that it means for a Jew as well as a non-Jew. Okay. So now what's left for us to do is to determine what ta'aneh means. Okay. What is lo ta'aneh? So the Targum helps us out.
Where are we on the page?
There's only five words. Lo ta'aneh grecha. Why is lo ta'aneh? What other word would you expect to use? Why not a verb that means to testify?
Then you use it twice.
Yeah. It wouldn't read well. Lo ta'id berecha eid shaker. Right. You agree?
Yeah.
So once you agree with that, then okay, it's poetic. It's lo ta'aneh berecha eid shaker. Okay. Are you following?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Ta'aneh, what's the shorish of this word? So the Targum just resolves everything by saying, you know what? It means lo tisad. So it means, yeah, the only reason why it said ta'aneh is because it's awkward for the Torah to mention two words in the row. It uses the same shorish.
Same
shorish for ta'aneh and eid. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Yaakov named a rock Gal-Eid? Sahadusa. Do you see that word there? Okay. Okay,
what's Sahad?
Sahadusa, eight.
What is it, huh?
Eight. Yagar Sahadusa, remember? Lavan named the rock Yagar Sahadusa when Yaakov called it Gal-Eid.
So here, this is here, and it's eternal, where Sahadusa is for Sheshaka. I mean, for eight. So it's two forms of the same verb.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alright, so the Gemaras in Makos, these two Gemaras on the other side, that they really cover what we just did. About Eidim Zomim and... Alright, there's something that the Gemara mentions about a Navi Sheker, because a Navi Sheker is fundamentally giving false testimony. All right, so I'll close with of course, this is the foundation of a court system, right? You can't have a court system if courts are not good at weeding out bad testimony,
mm-hmm.
right? So, remember on the scheme of the Aseret HaDibrot, when you go across, So what's across from Lo Sanei Recha Et Shaker is keeping Shabbos. Mm-hmm. 4 and 9, right? So I guess, you know, we could just say very simply that keeping Shabbos is a testimony
that
God created the world. And in fact, there are halachic issues about this. What is this? It's a Gemara, but try to think. What do we say on Friday night that testifies to the creation of the world? Okay, and what particular part of Kiddush? Bayechulu. The Gemara says that when we say Bayechulu Hashemayim V'aretz V'chol Tzva'am, right, that is the testimony to the creation of the world. That's what we're saying. Think of the words.
Uh-huh.
God's finished, the seventh day, etc., etc. We say it three times. We say it in the Shemona Esrei, afterwards, like a Sami Chazor Sechatz, right? And then afterwards in Kiddush and Home. Why don't we do a Chazor Sechatz on Friday night? You know what I'm saying? We do like a short Chazor Sechatz, we're going to avos, bidvaro, mechay, misim, avos, the first bracha, mechay, misim, bamar, mahal, kadosh, and ikamahu, right?
Uh-huh.
And then we have Shabbos in the middle, right? Lefanav nabod bi rov afachad, avoda yutzei, v'nodeh lishma b'chol yom tamid, modim, Elados Adon Shalom Sim Shalom.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we do that on Friday night? Why don't we do it every night? Think. Why don't we say Chazor Sechatz on Maariv every night?
Because it's questionable whether it's
Rishos. Tefilas Mipaskin. Tefilas Arav is Rishos, and the function of that is
you don't have
Chazor Sechatz. So you come late. All right. Even okay, it's Rishos anyway.
Okay.
So, but on Friday night, Maariv is a little different than every other Maariv. Because you... Yeah, okay, there is a Kabbalah Shabbos, right? So what mitzvah is there to do at the beginning of Shabbos? Zechoras Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Zechoras Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Zechorei Yuala Yayin. We recall Shabbos. So the davening Maariv on Friday night has Torah aspects to it, so you can't say it's Rishos. So it has to be like a shtickle Chazor Sechatz.
So it has to be different, because it's not.
That's why we say we don't really make a full Chazor Sechatz, but we make a shtickle Chazor Sechatz, so that people coming in late, they'll have more time. Okay, I'm just trying to say that Vayechulu, this is my connection between number 4 and number 9, you see? Keeping Shabbos is testifying. So when you say Vayechulu at the beginning of Shabbos, the halacha is supposed to stand. Some have the custom of sitting for after Vayechulu, but they'll stand for Vayechulu.
And then they'll sit.
I don't think that they're not a prevailing custom to sit for the whole thing. The most common custom is either to stand for the whole thing,
right,
or to stand
and then sit
for the bracha. But there is definitely a custom to sit for the whole thing, not so prevailing, but no one has the custom of sitting for the beginning and then standing for the second.
Okay.
No one has, not a custom. Someone does that, I don't care where it started, it's wrong, they have to be corrected. Right?
No,
but usually a custom is...
There are people that sit for the whole thing.
Yes, yeah, he's doing
it.
Right, but not to sit and stand. But if there is a custom, it's to stand and then sit.
Right.
That's the most prevailing custom. So, but not only should you stand when you say Vayechulu, but maybe, I don't know, how many of you here are, you know, on a regular basis on Friday night, but when, you know, they start Vayechulu, you know, I happen to be in a good position to be able to say it because they're usually waiting for me to start Vayechulu, but if you're still davening Shmon Esrei, so what I usually do, because, no, the rabbi usually, you know, takes the longest to say, but hopefully by the time I'm finished, I actually look around the room, and he doesn't start until I give him, you know, I tell him, he's waiting for me, and I tell him, we don't start yet, we don't start and look around, and yeah, okay, most people are finished, okay, fine.
But if you're not finished, what do you do?
So if you're not finished, you have to say Vayechulu afterwards, but, what's the but?
Stand
for sure, you're giving testimony, what else? Take it to the next step. Not a minion, because you don't need a minion to give testimony, but...
Amen?
Not exactly. There's not a bracha, but since you're giving testimony, you don't need a minion for testimony, but you do need
a beis din.
Two. You ever see at the end of shul? You ever see? You've seen him?
My sons do it when they come
what?
Home.
Oh, when they come home together. Oh, yeah. Okay, because they didn't even get someone in shul. Wow. Okay, so you always see at the end of davening, you see a whole but like seven or eight, maybe they came in very late or whatever, they were davening slowly, and you see seven or eight little groups, you know, two looking in the siddur together, saying, wait, who is your mind? Because they're giving testimony.
You have to be two people
at two the standing.
Standing.
Why? Because number four is keeping Shabbos, number nine, opposite it, is Lo Tana Brecha Eid Shaker. Don't bear false testimony. Make sure the testimony is good, it's proper, it's given properly. Okay, remember last week when we talked about Lo Tachmod, I said that there was a king who violated this and he wanted someone's vineyard. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Another king wanted something and he wanted a woman that he somehow couldn't be dissuaded, even though he was told she was married. But he was told her husband was at war, so according to the Gemara, he looked at some kind of opportunity to fulfill his momentary desire. And these two kings violated all the other four mitzvahs on that side of the Dibros.
Mm.
You know, when a king wants something, you know, it's a dangerous thing, right? The end of Mishlei talks about a woman tells her son, you know, you're king over a vast kingdom, but be careful. If you give in to your desires, you will lose your kingdom. It's the beginning of chapter 31 in Mishlei. The king in question is so thankful to his mother for giving him this good advice that he sings to her, Eishes Chayil. Eishes Chayil is for your mother, not a man to his wife. It's a child to the mother. Yeah. Okay, so that is Dibra number 9. So we still have Dibra number 8, 7, and 6.